Welcome, everybody. This is a Binge Watchers podcast. I am Lauren. I live in Los Angeles, and I work in reality television.
I'm Lisa. I live in Brooklyn, New York, and I am a video editor.
Please say that with some more confidence. That was depressing. No one's going to listen to this podcast if you sound like you want to kill yourself.
I'm Lisa. I live in Brooklyn, New York, and I am a video editor currently working on a morning show, which you haven't heard of.
Very nice. Way to sell yourself.
Thank you.
Lisa and I got together for this idea. Actually, Lisa came to me with this idea because there's so much TV on right now.
And I watch most of it.
which is insane, because we both work 12-hour days minimum, and my problem is always, what do you watch? Like, what is the new show that's worth kicking an old show out of? Because the thing is, every new show you pick up is like another, you know, hour out of your week that you'll never get back. So it's like, you know, is this worth replacing Breaking Bad for now that that's gone? Or is this worth stopping to watch Game of Thrones? Which is never the answer, because nothing can ever stop me from watching Game of Thrones. But
exactly. But I always feel like I picture the shows that I watch in like who's winning at golf, those like weird boards, the top 10. And then when someone falls off, they just like pull out that little slidey thing, push the new slidey thing in. I want to know what the new slidey thing should be.
Yeah, or if there even should be, like, should the show even be on the board at all?
Okay, so the plan is to watch everything on cable television, everything on network television, everything on YouTube, everything on Hulu, everything on Netflix, to waste our time watching television shows so that you can figure out what should make your weird golf leaderboard list.
So we have similar tastes in some stuff, but vastly different in a lot of other things. So this should be interesting discussions, because I don't think me and Lisa are going to agree all the time. So, and when we don't agree, we tend to yell at each other.
Yeah, we've had a few incidents on subways with yelling.
There's nothing that will get two TV and film majors that more passionate than someone not liking the show that you are obsessed with. So there have been fist fights in our college for less. So we picked Daredevil to start off with, mostly because everyone we know has been talking about it, and been saying, for the most part, I think Lisa will probably agree with me, that they've been saying positive things. That would be a pretty good place to start, considering I had never really like heard about it. I don't think Lisa had either. We hadn't seen anything about it, so we thought we might as well do one where we have a fresh start. So what were your first thoughts on the TV show?
So I went into this not knowing anything about Daredevil outside of the Ben Affleck movie, and like how awful that was. And I remember watching that movie thinking that Daredevil was a really boring superhero, similar to how I really don't like Captain America. Like, I keep waiting for Captain America to learn how to fly, and he never does.
You would be the only person that would complain about Captain America not having enough superpowers. Like, he literally is indestructible and like super brave and like very ripped,
and he like jumps off things, and he has that disc, the shield thing. I know.
Yeah, I only felt so-so. I don't know if I would have finished this set of episodes without, you know, having to do it for this program. It was kind of really long and drawn out. It like fulfilled every stupid stereotype that superhero movies have to fill. Like, the guy's an orphan, and he like no one understands him, but he's like still really good with women. It was just a little too predictable, and I think I expect a little bit more from Marvel, to be honest.
And it followed all of these tropes. On top of like the tropes, like, you have these stereotypical like dialogue moments, which happened immediately when he's in the confessional and he says something to the effect of like, I don't want forgiveness for what I've done, I want forgiveness for what I'm gonna do. And like, I said it along with him because I knew it was coming.
I mean, I definitely think it got better the more I watched, but I don't know, I was just like very underwhelmed by the whole thing. And everyone spoke so highly about it that I was actually waiting for it to be better. I was, you know, it's kind of like any of those like Breaking Bad, Lost type of situations where you're like, okay, everyone liked this, so I will probably like it. And then I didn't.
But I didn't, like, I didn't read that much about it. I didn't watch any of the trailers. I didn't even know Rosario Dawson was in it until she showed up. Like, that's how little I knew about it. Because I wanted to go into it with an open mind.
I think the stars of this show are actually the characters that are not the main guy, like the side characters. Like I think the friend and the lawyer was at first very annoying, but it kind of grew on me. The Rosario Dawson character, who's the bald guy?
The guy from
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
Vincent D'Onofrio. Were the best parts of the whole thing. Like, I honestly could do without the guy that plays Daredevil.
Well, you know that the guy who plays the best friend, Froggy?
Foggy, yeah.
Whatever. That name. That, like, poor man having to deal with that name is Fulton Reed. But I didn't realize until the second episode who he was, and I just remember sitting there watching him being like, I know that nerd. Where do I know that nerd from? I know that nerd from something. But he was, like, younger and a little bit more of a redhead. And it's because he was Fulton Reed, which I was so excited about that that man is acting again. And that was, I thought, the best character of the show, but with the least screen time. He's, like, third build. He's billed under the blonde chick.
It makes sense because the blonde chick is such, like, a crucial part to those first couple of episodes. But he becomes more of a lead character, I don't know, probably episode 4, which is great. So, I don't know. It's just a mixed bag because I don't think it was, like, terrible, but I don't think it was, like, necessarily worth the 6 hours that was put into it. Like, that I put into it. Obviously, there's more than 6 hours actually put into this.
I very fully agree.
The other thing I noticed that really bugged me the entire time is that it's so freaking dark all the time.
It is so dark. Like, did they forget to buy enough lights? It's not like rich dark. Like, there's not a lot of color.
It's annoying. I think I tried to figure out a reason why they would have done it this way, and the only thing I could come up with was, like, oh, he's blind, so, like, let's make the world a little darker because you can't see. But then it's just, like, then I'm annoyed because I'm not really sure. Like, those two brothers, I literally could not tell them apart until, like, episode 4 because they were never in a scene where their faces were lit well enough for me to tell them apart.
Right, and I feel like they knew that because one of them has that weird, like, stick figure scar coming off of his eye, and the other one doesn't. And that was my defining factor. But, okay, so let's just talk about, like, the first episode.
Okay.
But the first episode, one of the things that really bothered me the most was, like, this whole human trafficking thing with the Russians. And they couldn't come up with a better bad guy than the Russians. Like, it's not like they gave them names. They didn't give them, like a mafia name or, like an Al Capone-type name. It was just, like, they were constantly referred to as the Russians. And, like, in this, like, very, like, Cold War kind of dated, that's the best we can come up with is calling them the Russians.
We just hate Russians. That's what they're trying to say is, like, it's actually, yeah, it is kind of weird because it's, like, even the, what were they, Japanese or Chinese, the other family, it was, like, I mean, they probably used their name twice in 6 episodes, and I just knew that they were, like, Asian.
Right.
And they were also the bad guys. And it was like, right. You had the Russians and then that one random white dude and then the Asians.
Right. It's like, as a country, we hate Vladimir Putin and we hate Kim Jong-il, so we might as well all just have 2 bad guys in all of New York City from, like, the 2 worst places that Americans consider to ever be anywhere you would ever want to visit.
Yeah, and you would expect Marvel to be a little bit more well thought out past this, and that did drop a ball, for sure. I'm also not a huge fan of the Marvel movies that I feel like stand too much on the fight scenes. I feel like, you know, I don't know how to say this, but, like, the Avengers, for the most part, had a pretty intricate plot line with some fighting scenes. Obviously, that's why you go and you see these movies, is for the great special effects. And this one, I felt like it was, like, small plot line, giant fight scene, small plot line, giant fight scene. And it's like, if this was actually just a Marvel movie, maybe it would have played better because they would have had to cut back a little bit on that in order to actually get the story across. Like, yeah, essentially, you said it right, is that Netflix allowed them to make a 13-hour fighting movie, which is great if you're, like, a dude that loves fighting movies, but, like, I don't want to commit 6 hours of my life to, like, absolutely no plot line for, like, the first 3 episodes of the movie.
But it is, like, a very, 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 very violent movie. And I kept waiting for someone to balance it out with some sort of sex scene. Like, someone in this show to get laid. And there's no sex. Like, how can we have a movie that's this violent and still be like, well, we can't show people getting it on? There's, like, 1 makeout scene. Like, how... I just need something to make me feel happy after watching all of these people get, like, beaten to a pulp. And you can't, like, you can't have any sort of, like, rom influence in there at all. I mean, it's supposed to, every superhero has his, like, gal pal.
No, you actually had to wait until episode, what, 4 or 5 before anyone even, like, kissed?
And I read somewhere that the creators of the show were going for something like an NC-16 rating, like, not NC-17, not super scandalous, but, like, above rated R. Or something, I don't know.
Well, the violence alone would probably be above rated R. Like, it's been a while since I've literally seen someone... Like, a lot of, you know, a lot of violence nowadays is, like, implied. It's kind of like the sex scenes are as well. But this one was, like, you watched as this guy drove a spike through his head. And I was like, oh, Jesus.
Right. And then nobody kisses anybody ever. It was, like, almost offensive.
Everyone's a virgin.
Everyone's a virgin. Oh, my God. I know. Even Fulton Reed's a virgin, and, like, after he joined the Bash Brothers, you know that kid was getting laid left and right. So, as somebody who's lived in New York, did it bother you that it was set almost exclusively in Hell's Kitchen?
I can't imagine what it would be like to watch this show and not know where that is in New York, because it sure as hell seemed like the ghetto, and Hell's Kitchen is, like, the nicest area of New York, almost. So, I was like... And, you know, and obviously this is in a fictional world where, like, part of the city of Manhattan has been destroyed because of the Avengers. I think that's where it was going. But it just made it seem like there was, like rapists and, like, muggers at every corner of this of that part of the city. And I was like, this is, like, where all the nice brunch places are. Like, this is where you go antique shopping.
But it was done in this way that it made it feel like Hell's Kitchen was its own borough of all of New York. And there were times when I thought that they were just calling New York City Hell's Kitchen. Like, it took me, I would say it took me a good 2 episodes, and maybe I'm just an idiot, but it took me a good 2 episodes to realize that, like, they weren't using Hell's Kitchen in replace of New York City. Because they talk about Hell's Kitchen like, we're off from Hell's Kitchen, we need to save Hell's Kitchen, I need to save my town. And it's like, Hell's Kitchen is 20 blocks?
I think so. I think it's like 20 blocks and like 3 avenue blocks. So it's a pretty small little subsection of Manhattan.
And they kept being like 42nd and 9th, and I was like, okay, like, yeah, that's in Hell's Kitchen, but that's not, like, we're not talking about a substantial part of the city. I would get it if it was Brooklyn, I would super get it if it was Staten Island, or Manhattan, but I don't understand how, you know, I need to save my city of Hell's Kitchen. I feel like whoever wrote this has never stepped foot in Manhattan. And they're, like, taking taxis places inside of Hell's Kitchen. They're taking taxis no more than 20 blocks. Like, at max, they're taking a taxi 20 blocks because they can't walk or take the A train.
There were a couple of plot holes in this that I thought were really apparent, and one of the things was the money, is they always talked about how poor they were, yet they took cabs everywhere.
Everywhere.
And there's a point in the series where the receptionist buys office equipment for $3,500, and they, like, there seems to be no issue with this. Like, no one is upset with her, yet they keep talking about how they don't have enough money to turn on the lights, which is, again, another reason it's always dark for some reason. But that idea of, like, we've been poor in New York, like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
I never take cabs. I can't afford to take cabs.
So now we're going to go to Lisa's friend Erin, who gave us a 2-minute review of what she thought about Daredevil.
So I'm glad that she agrees with me about Fulton Reed.
I love her line is like, I'm just gonna trust him because of his face, which is kind of true because he has that like a lovable dork quality about him, and you're like, he's probably a good guy.
And I also like Rosario Dawson's character more now that I've remembered, thank you Erin, that she was in Pussycat, the Josie and the Pussycats.
Long time. These are some throwback actors.
I know. I want to know where they wrangled all of them. Because even Vincent D'Onofrio, like, hasn't really been... He was on a Law and Order situation or something, right?
Mm-hmm. He was on Criminal Intent.
Right. But he hasn't really been relevant, I feel like, in a long time.
So let's wrap this up, Lisa. What do you think overall? Is this worth watching? Is this worth binge-watching? What do you think?
So I would say that as far as binge-watching this show goes, I kind of feel about it the same way that I do... The Walking Dead too, and that it's like so violent all the time that I left binge watching it in like a really bad mood because it was like so dark and it was so many compound fractures and like people having their faces bashed in and everything that I left it like kind of angry, and I feel like you really should only watch one episode at a time. So I would say that it's probably not worth calling in sick to work to watch it.
So my main issue with this show was that predictability. I just feel like if you're really going to invest in the show, I want the show to surprise me. I want to feel like I walked away really getting an experience that I couldn't have gotten anywhere else. And I feel like if you really just want to see an action movie, go rent The Avengers or go rent X-Men or go rent some other superhero movie. You don't need to watch 13 hours of it. Like, no additional, like, nothing was additionally added by watching 13 hours of it, except that everything is drawn out to, like, a little too far. I would say that this show is not worth missing unlimited mimosa brunch for. You should actually probably watch the show when you're drunk. It would probably be more enjoyable. If you feel like following us on Twitter, which would be awesome, because there's officially two people following us on Twitter, which is Lisa and myself. You can follow us at A Binge Watcher on Twitter and A Binge Watcher on Facebook as well. We have a fan site. You can also email us at abingewatcher@gmail.com. Any suggestions you have for shows, or if you just want to call us idiots, or, you know, threats. We'll take threats. Why not? It's an email.
Yeah, I mean, as a first go at this, hopefully there's some constructive criticism and not douchebaggery. But, you know, we'll take both.
Yeah, there's going to be douchebaggery. Get ready.
Yeah. I mean, but hopefully we didn't completely fuck up the first go.
Because we're going to keep doing it. We don't really give a shit. So that's it for now. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.
Bye.